And we welcome you to the 2015 final edition of El Paso Primetime. And today, as you've probably been given nice gift cards for the holidays, it's now time to suggest two authors and books for your consideration. The first one comes from Karen Slaughter, whose latest endeavor, Pretty Girls, holds your suspense through the night. Make yourself a pot of tea and get comfortable, for this book will hold your interest through the night. But there's more to Karen than meets the eye. She's a New York Times best-selling author, and we'll also talk about her foundation designed to save the public library. Let's start our conversation here. And welcome to El Paso Primetime, Karen. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You have so many books under your belt, and yet this one, Pretty Girls, is quite the most phenomenal, most suspenseful novel I've seen since Patrick Susskind's Perfume.
Wow, that's high praise. Thank you very much.
It really does keep you riveted, because the way you set things up inside the book really just puts you into a whole new area. You're almost like one of those little GoPros that either one of the two sisters is wearing.
Yeah.
It takes you right into the heart of the matter.
Well, thank you. You know, I worked really carefully on those characters. This was my first book I've written that didn't have cops as the narrators. And I'm the youngest of three girls, so I was sort of doing shorthand using my relationship with my sisters.
One of the things that I really wanted to kind of center in on is the way that you've woven this whole scenario in and around, I guess, the Atlanta area. It makes me feel, I've never been to Atlanta, and yet I feel as though I've lived there all my life.
Well, that's high praise. You know, I feel like I'm sort of an ambassador for the city. A lot of misconceptions still exist about Southerners and just exactly what we get up to down here. And so when I write about Atlanta, I write about the 21st century Atlanta. And you know, like every other city in America, we have our rich people, we have our poor people, we have our bad neighborhoods and good neighborhoods. But we also have over 100 languages spoken here, and we have the largest African-American middle class of any major American city. So it really is a forward-thinking, very dynamic, wonderful place to live.
Your book is also a forward-thinking and a fast-thinking kind of suspense novel, in that you also bring up the topic that's always hush-hush, especially where we're at in the desert Southwest, and that's the issue of domestic violence amongst women and children.
Well, it's true, and you know, unfortunately, it's become so commonplace that people don't really pay attention to it. You know, you think about the fact that sexual assault, for instance, happens every 7 minutes in America. That's what's reported. Who knows what's not reported? And that's only women over the age of 18. So there are all sorts of violations going on against women, against children, that we really, I guess, have become anesthetized to. And it's politically expedient to ignore, you know, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or a liberal or a socialist or whatever. I mean, it's not something that people talk about. And I think one place where that the victims do have a voice is crime fiction. And I love reading crime fiction, and I love the fact that, you know, there are some great writers out there like Tess Gerritsen, Michael Connelly, Jeff Deaver, writing about these issues in a realistic way where they're not politicized. It's just, this is how it is, and this is what happens.
When you wrote Cop Town, one of the things that is not paralleled in your book is the difference in what I call cop speak. You know, in this particular novel, I feel as though I'm the fourth woman in the crowd. I get to hang with you. I get to see what's going on. But I don't get to help you. You know, I feel almost helpless at sometimes, especially that one scene in the book where you walk into the garage and all of a sudden the magnitude of a crime scene unveils, and I can't help you. That's a great sense of writing versus what you did with Cop Town, which is kind of like an up-tempo gumshoe kind of a thing. You know,
I like that description. But, you know, I do want people to care about my characters. I want them to feel like they are inside the story. and they feel the threats and they feel the joy, they feel the hope and the sorrow and all of those emotions. And, you know, that's my job as a writer, is to make this world something that you inhabit as a reader.
Well, you've done something else that really piques my interest as well, and this one really does touch at my heart as well. It's one, you're the founder of Save the Libraries.
Yes.
A wonderful organization. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, what we do is we raise awareness and we raise money. And we don't actually take money from people. We say, donate to your local Friends of the Library or your library foundation. Start locally. And that's so important, because if we all help locally, then suddenly nationally we have a stronger library system. And the fact is, libraries are the backbone of the community. They're the linchpin of our education system. A lot of people, you know, they get out of college, they get jobs, they can afford to buy books. Maybe they don't have children or their children are grown. And they forget how important the library was to them, to their children, and to everyone they knew, you know. I mean, and it's sad, because libraries are so vital to people across the economic spectrum. You know, they have reading time, they have internet access. A lot of kids in rural areas don't have internet at home, so the only place they can get online is the library. It's just a really important thing, and the fact that funding is being cut to this, I think, is a disgrace.
I do, too. I subscribe to trying to help as many libraries as I can through my life. My mom instilled that in me. One day up in Silverton, Colorado, we found out they actually have a Carnegie Library there.
Wow.
And so we decided we were going to help them by bringing them books and everything. And you know, the funny thing is that they accepted maybe one book, but all the rest of these other things, they just said, nope, we don't want any of this. And we're talking Hemingway, we're talking about all these great novels that we brought up there, Kipling.
Wow. I would have taken him.
Oh, listen, we finally found a place in Gunnison, Colorado, who would take it. But, you know, it still comes back to being able to help the library. And, you know, through a couple of years, I think we finally got the librarian to figure out that we're trying to save, you know, the Carnegie Library from, you know, extinction.
Yeah, there's so few of those Carnegie Libraries left. They really are a national treasure. You know, sometimes systems have all the money they need, and I always say, if there's a system that's really wealthy, I guarantee you can go one neighborhood over and find a system that's very poor, and who need those books, and who need money, and who need help and support. So, you know, like I live in Atlanta, and the Fulton County system is doing pretty well, but DeKalb, adjacent to that, definitely needs help. I mean, in our great wisdom as voters, we voted for a library to be built in a community that really needs a library. But then when it came time to pay for staff and pay for books, we said, no, we're not going to pay for that.
Wow.
So it literally sat empty for almost a year before our politicians found a way to find some money at the bottom of the couch cushions to open this place.
Let me ask you a question about e-books and libraries. Do you think e-books had a hand in maybe kind of shuttering some of the public library systems down?
Really, you know, the thing is, people who have the money to buy books buy them as e-books or they buy them as hardcover, and they're the book buyers. A lot of libraries let people check out reading devices. They let them check out e-books on their own devices. It just really depends on the community. I think what really hurt libraries was we had the financial crisis, and politicians were looking for ways to cut money. And they thought, well, nobody needs a library. I don't need the library. You know, it's very short-sighted thinking, you know. And so they took away funding, and staff were fired. Branches were closed. We had a lot of libraries who didn't have enough money to even acquire new books. I mean, it was really a travesty. And that's one of the things I wanted to do with Save the Libraries, is bring attention to this and let people see, hey, you know, you might not use the library, but I guarantee you when you were growing up as a kid and when you had kids yourself, you needed that library, and it's time to pay that forward.
Absolutely. You know, there's nothing like the smell of a library book, especially on a Saturday afternoon, really and truly. Karen, I think what we need to do, I know we're up against the clock here, so what I'd like to do is extend an invitation for you to come back to El Paso Primetime here at KTEP, and let's talk a little bit more about the novels you've written, and also, more importantly, about your foundation, Save the Libraries. I think that's really important to put out there for people, too.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Well, have a wonderful afternoon. Good luck with everybody else, and we'll be talking soon. Karen Slaughter, thank you so much for joining us on El Paso Primetime.
My pleasure. Thank you.